five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the 5 sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms, and conviction. All these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interaction. Please repeat. The five great elements.
Five great elements.
False ego and intelligence.
False ego and intelligence.
The unmanifested.
The
10 senses and the mind. The 5 sense objects.
5 sense objects.
Desire, hatred, happiness.
Desire, hatred, happiness.
Distress, the aggregate, the life symptom.
Distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms.
And convictions.
And convictions.
All these are considered.
All these are considered.
In summary.
In summary.
To be the field of activities.
In the field of activities.
And its interaction.
And its interaction.
From all the authoritative statements of the great sages, the Vedic hymns and the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra, the components of this world can be understood as follows. First, there are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are the five great elements, Mahabhuta. Then there are false ego, intelligence, and the unmanifested stage of the three modes of nature. Then there are 5 senses for acquiring knowledge, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. Then 5 working senses, voice, leg, hand, anus, and genitals. Then, above the senses, there is the mind, which is within, and which can be called the sense within. Therefore, including the mind, there are 11 senses altogether. Then there are the 5 objects of the senses, smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. Now the aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activity. If one makes an analytical study of these 24 subjects, then he can very well understand the field of activity. Then there are desire, hatred, happiness, and distress, which are interactions, representations of the 5 great elements in the gross body. The living symptoms represented by consciousness and conviction are the manifestation of the subtle body, mind, ego, and intelligence. These subtle elements are included within the field of activities. The 5 great elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of false ego, technically called the materialistic conception, or tamasabuddhi, intelligence in ignorance. This further represents the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. The unmanifested modes of material nature are called pradhan. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail, along with their interactions, should study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary only is given. The body is the representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body which are 6 in number. The body is born, it grows, it stays, it produces byproducts, then it begins to decay, and at the last stage it vanishes. Therefore, the field is the non-permanent material thing. However, the chetragya, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. This type of study is called Samkhya. Samkhya philosophy, there's an atheistic type of Samkhya philosophy. Prabhupada says, describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a story of Lord Kapiladev, who's the son of Kardamamuni and Devahuti, and after his father left, he was supposed to take care of his mother, and then he was giving her instructions on the Absolute Truth. Lord Kapila is the incarnation of Krishna, and he's describing the theistic Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya basically means to count. We enumerate. This is this, the five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses in the mind, the five sense objects. It's counting, just a list of things. That's basically what science is. Science means the scientists are very proud. They say, oh, well, we get our knowledge by study, and we examine things with our senses, and we use our intelligence, and we can, basically all they're doing is enumerating things, just making lists of things. And of course, not that it doesn't require intelligence to make all the experiments and the theorems and the write doctoral theses and everything. It's not like it doesn't take intelligence, but it's not considered very advanced science. It's just it's basically just listing things, looking at things, seeing how things are put together, how you can take them apart and combine them with other things and make new things. It's basically a type of mechanics work, or like a doctor. A doctor is sort of like an advanced mechanic of the body. And and the thing is that the materialists will look at that in the so-called scientific age, and he'll say, oh, well, you people, you're so simple. Five great elements. Duh. Right? the 10,
fire, stick, rock.
Yeah. that's like the caveman. Said, oh,
fire, rock,
water. They think like that, if they see a list like that. What they don't know, the point is that Krishna's energy is unlimited. I've told this story before, but there was some of you are familiar with a devotee in our movement named Sariputta. He left his body a few years ago. You know Sariputta, wasn't
he? Was he the physicist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like super genius.
Yeah.
And just by any standard of what people consider intelligent, he's really smart, and he's very mathematically and scientifically inclined. And his assignment by Prabhupada, he's a PhD in whatever it was, physics or something, and his assignment from Prabhupada was to preach in the scientific world, because a scientist will only accept somebody talking to them if they have some letters after their name, especially PhD. So that if somebody tries to talk to them and they're only like a master of whatever it is, or heaven forbid, a bachelor of science, or not even a college degree at all, just going to high school, if somebody somebody like that tries to talk to them, they won't even listen. It's like not worth their time to pay attention to such an uneducated simpleton, is how they see it. And what they don't know is that anything can be... Oh, so Sariputta was telling, he lived here for a while, and he told this one story of this scientist who won the Nobel Prize and his field of study, what he got his Nobel Prize was for studying the armpit of this particular type of insect. I don't know what kind of insect it was. But that's what he got the big prize. Nobel Prize, like a big deal, right? So what's he studying? The armpit of an insect, some bug on the ground. So, so the point is, you can, any aspect of Krishna's energy, you can get into to an infinite degree. You can study a molecule of wood for your whole life and never know everything there is to know about a molecule of wood. You can study any aspect of Krishna's energy, you can study to an unlimited degree and never come to the end of it, because Krishna's intelligence is infinite and his creation is infinite in complexity. So if Krishna makes a list like this, then he's just making, just simplifying everything. And Krishna could enumerate everything there is to know about every molecule and atom and cell of every aspect of his material energy. He can do that because he's God. But what can we understand of that, right? Nothing. So why bother? But Krishna will go so far as to give a list like this, just to somehow give us some idea of what's going on. And it's an important idea. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses and the mind, the 5 sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. So these things are very, each one of them is a very big concept in itself. If you can understand something about desire and hatred, happiness, distress, the life symptoms, convictions, you would understand a lot if you understood just a little bit of any one of those things. So the point is, anyway, the point is that there's no need for all that. After all, Krishna says at the end of where he enumerates some of his glories in the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of it he says, but what need is there for all this detailed information? With but a single spark of my splendor, I pervade the entire universe. I pervade everything. You can, if you want, you can study the armpit of a bug for your whole life. If that's what you want to do, you can do it. And Krishna will let you do it. If you want to study everything there is to know about computers and design software, you can design software till you're blue in the face. You can discover some new antibiotic that nobody can develop an immunity to. You can discover the cure for cancer, or whatever you want. If you want to get into something in the material realm, you can do it. But there's no need for it. There's no ultimate benefit in it. The only good thing about this material world is to get out of it and help other people to get out of it too. There's nothing to be accomplished here. There's nothing desirable to be accumulated here. Like that last week, somebody bought this Picasso for $179 million, a painting. And a bunch of lines, and I can't even tell what it is. You can see one of them is like a woman, looks sort of like a woman. But in the other, you've seen it, right? Have you seen the picture of it? It's Picasso, and he's an abstract guy, a famous artist, and somebody bought this painting for $179 million. So, and he thinks, oh, look what I have gotten for my art collection, and people will admire me. Look what I have. But there's nothing to be attained. There's another verse in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, a person who sees with equal vision, a dog eater, a cow, a learned Brahmin, is a Samadarshi, you see an elephant, you see a cow, you see a dog, you see a human being, a Brahmin, a Sudra, a demigod, a worm. There's no difference. It's the soul that occupies each one of those bodies is exactly the same spirit soul. So, and uh, So in another verse, Krishna says, a learned person, he sees pebbles, stones, and gold, all as the same. What's the difference? And people will love gold. I'll give you a big bag full of rocks from the street. Oh, thank you very much. Got this big bag of rocks. And nobody wants a big bag of rocks. But if I say, I'll give you a big bag full of gold, you'll say, thank you very much. Like, Satyajit in the Krishna book, he got a jewel, the Shamataka jewel, and he wore it, and that jewel produced big mounds of gold every day. And he was so proud of that gold that he produced. When he came into the city of Dwarka, he wore the jewel around his neck, and everybody thought it was so effulgent that everybody, the residents of Vrindavan, they ran to Krishna, and they said, Krishna, the sun god's here to see you. Surya is here to see you. He's so effulgent, must be the sun god. And Krishna knew who it was. He knew it was Satyajit. It was just a regular, average sort of guy, but maybe a little powerful. But he had this jewel, this Shamataka jewel, and he was so proud of it that he had it installed in a temple, and he hired Brahmins to worship it. And then he loved the gold. Well, what is gold? Gold is just a different form of material, and it's no different from rocks or paper or anything else. Pebbles, stones, or gold. It's just another thing. So, and Krishna asked Satyajit, he said, Satyajit, can you give me the Shamataka jewel? And he should have given it to him. It's Krishna. It's the supreme. He's the Lord. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. He's the Lord of Dwarka. Everybody was serving Krishna in Dwarka, and Krishna asked Satyajit for the Shamataka jewel. And Satyajit said, he said no. He said he refused. He didn't want to give it to Krishna. Now Krishna wanted it for his father, for Ugrasena, for his
one of his wives?
I can't remember.
We should read that chapter. I just remember how he finished his life, such as everybody remembers something.
Yeah. He asked them for it, and Satyajit said no. And he took it back, and he had it worshipped in his temple, and then his brother one day, Prasena took the Shamataka jewel and he put it on, and he went riding off on his horse to show off, and he rode into the forest.
Jambavan.
And that's when Jambavan caught him and killed him. No,
fighting lion.
Jambavan killed...
lion.
Was it a lion there first?
So his mother was killed by a lion, mm-hmm. and lion took that jewel,
uh-huh.
And Jambavan saw a lion, yeah. along with that jewel. Uh-huh. And he killed the lion and took the jewel.
And gave it to his son to play with as a toy.
Yeah.
Not son, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, it's his son.
His son.
In the Krishna book. His son. They gave it to his son to play with. And meanwhile, Satyajit, he was in Dwarka, and he started spreading a rumor that Krishna had killed his brother just to get the Shamataka jewel. So people were wondering. They were spreading the rumor. So Krishna didn't want that. So he went into the forest and he found Jambavan's lair. He went through like a tunnel into his cave or into his place. And he told the residents of Dwarka went with him. And he told the the citizens, he said, you wait out here for me, and you'll be scared if you go in there with me. So he said, wait out there with me, and then he went in alone. He found the boy, Jambavan's son, playing on the ground with the jewel. Kuchumbhavan was really a devotee, a pure devotee, and he didn't really care about the jewel for its so-called value, so he gave it to his son to play with. And then Krishna came and he's taking it away from the son, Jambavan's son, and then the son's nursemaid, she cries out, she's like, oh, Krishna's stealing the jewel, Krishna's stealing the jewel. And Jambavan came running, and when he saw Krishna, he was really angry, so he started to fight with him. And they fought. Jambavan was like the strongest living entity, ordinary living entity, and they fought for 28 days straight. And in the meantime, the residents of Dwarka went home. They thought that Krishna had been killed. And they went home. But then Jambavan, he finally realized that, oh, this must be my worshipable Lord, because I'm the strongest person there is. Nobody can fight with me. So nobody can fight with me. So it must be Krishna there that I'm fighting with. So then he surrendered to Krishna, and he gave Krishna the Shyamataka jewel, and he gave Krishna his lovely daughter, Jambavati, to be one of his wives. And Krishna took her back, married her, and there's more to the story.
He gave it back to Satyaji, and then Satyaji told, you take it back and also marry my wife.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that, and her name was?
Yeah, because he was
Satyabhama.
Satyabhama?
Satyabhama.
Satyaji's daughter.
Is Satyabhama.
Satyabhama.
That is Jambavati and
Satyabhama. Jambavati's daughter is Jambati.
Yeah.
So you got two girls and a jewel. He always wins.
Krishna always wins. The good guy.
Comes out ahead.
Yeah, that's like a tradition. A tradition we use.
I'm so envious.
Anyway, so I'm just going to go into one final point here. The last paragraph of this says, the body is the representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body which are six in number. The body is born, it grows, it stays, it produces byproducts, then it begins to decay, and at the last stage it vanishes. Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. However, the Chetragya, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. So there's two, there's the body is called the field of activities of the Chetra, and the living entity within the body is called Chetragya, the knower of the field. And then, so, and Prabhupada always says that, so you know the pains and pleasures of your body, I know the pains and pleasures of my body, but I don't know the pains and pleasures of your body, you don't know the pains and pleasures of my body, but Krishna knows the pains and pleasures, he knows everything about everybody. Krishna knows everything to the infinite degree. Therefore the field is a non-permanent material thing, or the Chetragya, the knower of the field, is different. So we're eternal. We know this body when we have, in our past life, when we have the body of whatever type of body we have. We don't know what kind of body we have. Some people remember their past life, but that's extremely rare, and it happens occasionally. Some people can remember one past life, and there are many well-documented cases of that. The transmigration of the soul shouldn't be a mystery anymore. I mean, the fact of its existence the fact of reincarnation, the transmigration of the soul, should be accepted by any thinking person who has the least type of analytical mind who can hear anything. These stories are around and about in all fields of human study these days, that people know that there are documented cases of people who remember past lives. It's not even a question anymore. But still, so many people deny, don't believe, because it's not their train. I mean, in India, generally, not everybody accepts the fact of reincarnation. But outside of India, it's still, even in this so-called modern scientific age, it's still not a very, very widely accepted thing.
It hasn't been empirically proved on any account.
Yeah. Well, but that it has been.
I mean, it's only by conjecture and stories of people who remember places and events that were documented, but that's, once again,
it's not good enough for a lot.
No, it's not good enough for scientists.
Yeah. And they can't duplicate it in the laboratory. No. They say, well, you say you can remember that part. I don't remember.
And that would they'd have to accept the existence of the soul. And yeah. That would be the undoing of material and scientists.
Yeah. And if you... Anyway. So, the... Well, that's enough for today. I hope there's some prasadam.
Yeah.
I made a putter.
You did?
I made a big putter.
It's almost there.
Any questions or comments?
You made a putter.
I made a big putter. It wasn't much.
So, where do we find this more information of Sankhya?
Well, you can read in the, like Prabhupada says there, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or was the fourth canto? The canto where it describes there's a picture of Lord Kapiladev sitting on the cover, and he's talking. He's sitting on a cushion. He's instructing his mother, Devahuti. So you'll find that volume of three or four, and you can study more Sankhya there.
Third canto.
Or fourth.
The one
yeah.
I remember.
But you can try to
do
it. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.